towns and villages in the West Bank. They are surrounded by settlers and land taken by settlers or military encampments. And then there are fenced roads, checkpoints, barriers to movement, the separation wall. This is an infrastructure of confinement of Palestinians in small enclaves of land.
And I've been to Qalqilya. I've visited Qalqilya, and Qalqilya is totally surrounded by the wall. You enter and leave Qalqilya through a checkpoint that's maybe 20 meters in diameter, and you can walk all the way around the walls in Qalqilya. Qalqilya is an imprisoned population.
Correct, and it's not the only one. There are many of these communities within the 12% of the West Bank, which sits on the western side of the wall. So this is occupied territory where Palestinian villages and water basins are. So they are de facto, in quotation marks, annexed. Although, again, it's very tricky to refer to the jure versus de facto annexation. It's treated by Israel as annexed. And then these communities are separated from the rest of the West Bank. So they cannot access Israel, and they need to go through gates or through checkpoints, as you say, in the case of Qalqilya, to connect to the rest of the West Bank. And think of the livelihood, the farmers who need to access their land, the pastoral communities who need to take their livestock around. So this is incredible. And then on top of it, there is the maze of bureaucratic barriers, permits Palestinians have to apply to in order to carry out the most basic activities in life, like building a house, moving residents, or traveling within the West Bank or abroad. Everything is regulated by the Israelis. And the fact that there are Palestinian authorities in the West Bank and the de facto ones in Gaza has absolutely not changed this reality.
So there are physical barriers. There are all these physical barriers outside prison. I'm not imprisoned. I'm not in an Israeli jail, but I'm just living in a Palestinian community in the West Bank. There are physical barriers that block my movement. There are administrative barriers. And then there's all this surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
There are all these surveillance systems. Can you talk about these surveillance systems like Red Wolf and Blue Wolf and Wolf Pack and the Smart City Initiative? Is a huge topic area. Can you kind of convey this concisely to listeners? What this whole surveillance system is like, which matches the term that you use, a panopticon. It's a panopticon.
I'm glad you picked that concept. The panopticon is an expression, I think it was coined by Bentham to describe this prison that can be surveilled from within, where the prisoner can never hide from the jailer. And I use this expression because within the carceral continuum that Israel has built around the Palestinians and for the Palestinians, surveillance plays a huge role. You asked me about the Red Wolf, Blue Wolf, and White Wolf system. So the Red Wolf system is a system of cameras equipped with facial recognitions that is installed at checkpoints and identifies Palestinians. It interfaces with a three-pronged system, which consists of Wolf Pack, Blue Wolf, and White Wolf. The Wolf Pack is the database that contains images, personal data, and security ratings of Palestinians. So you imagine you're a Palestinian, you cross any checkpoint, and the facial recognition system in the CCTVs sends information about you to the Wolf Pack. And then there are the Blue Wolf and White Wolf. The Blue Wolf app is used by the Israeli army to identify Palestinians, and the White Wolf is the equivalent used by Jewish Israeli settlers in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. So they go around with their phones. You can see them more and more, settlers and soldiers filming Palestinians. What they are doing is taking information, is capturing the face of the Palestinians and immediately connecting to the wolf pack that is fed also into by the Red Bull system. I mean, this is why eventually Amnesty International, in one of its recent reports, has denounced this system as automated apartheid, because it's the system that allows the continuous surveillance of the Palestinians and reinforces Israel's settler colonial occupation, because this system intensifies, particularly in the proximity of settlements, where also most of the arrest and detention take place. And not because the Palestinians go there with intention to harm, but because this is their land. They move, they farm, they cross. And the moment they step on what Breaking the Silence calls red lines, invisible lines that the settlers have set informing the army, but the Palestinians are not necessarily aware of, then the army, it's alerted by the settlers go there and apprehend the Palestinians.
So, I mean, these are actions, Israel's actions vis-a-vis the Palestinian people and its carceral system constitute grave breaches of the Fourth Geneva Convention and the Rome Statute itself, the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court.
I did identify a number of alleged crimes, alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity in the cases and in the system that I studied. For example, severe arbitrary deprivation of liberty in violation of fundamental rules of international law, or willful deprivation of protected person's right to fair and regular trial, as I mentioned, the unlawful deportation or transfer or unlawful confinement, the widespread and institutionalized use of torture or persecution, something we have not touched upon. Persecution is when a specific group or individuals within that group are intentionally and severely mistreated, often due to their race, religion, nationality, etc. When this happens as part of a widespread and organized attack against civilians, it amounts to a crime that is prosecutable under the Rome Statute as well.
It's a crime against humanity.
It's a crime under the Rome Statute, exactly. Like as apartheid.
Francesca Albanese is UN Special Rapporteur on the human rights situation in occupied Palestine. We'll link to Francesca's reports to the UN at greenplanetmonitor.net. We'll also link to a recent report by EuroMed Human Rights Monitor. If graphic descriptions of sexual assault cause you distress, you may wish to click mute. According to EuroMed Monitor, Israeli military police have trained dogs to urinate on and sexually penetrate Palestinian prisoners. We'll link to that report at greenplanetmonitor.net. You are listening to the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Palestinians currently held in Israeli dungeons, none are more prominent than Marwan Barghouti. Barghouti is a veteran member of Palestine's Fatah movement and political party. In 2002, the Second Intifada just underway, Barghouti was convicted by an Israeli military court for his alleged involvement in attacks in which five Israelis died. Barghouti denied the charges and refused to recognize the court. The Inter-Parliamentary Union declared at that time that Barghouti was denied a fair trial. Barghouti, now 66 years old, is serving a life sentence. He's widely considered to be Palestine's most popular leader, far more so than Israel USA's man in Ramallah, Mahmoud Abbas. Should he ever be liberated, Barghouti is considered the most likely figure to unite Palestinians and advance the so-called two-state solution. The Palestinian Mandela, Barghouti is commonly called. The comparison isn't quite apt. Nelson Mandela was liberated after 27 years in jail. A similar figure, Native American leader Leonard Peltier, spent almost 50 years in jail before Joe Biden pardoned him. Will the Israelis ever liberate Marwan Barghouti? Not unless they're forced to. Of late, Barghouti has been starved, beaten, denied access to health services, and set upon by dogs. Apartheid Israel's fascist security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, has gone to the bother of visiting Barghouti in jail just to taunt him. For the latest news about Marwan Barghouti, the GPM reached out to his lawyer, Ben Marmarelli.
Tell me what situation Marwan Barghouti is in at the moment. You've been quoted as saying that there is a clear pattern of escalating abuse, violence, and medical neglect in regard to Marwan, and I'm sure this is probably the same with a lot of other prisoners. But what's Marwan Barghouti's current situation?
Oh, well, it's not just Marwan's situation. It's all of the Palestinian political prisoners are being tortured ever since, at least, there was always torture in the Israeli prisons, but since the 7th of October 2023, the situation escalated. At that point, the guards came in, the cells, took everything, took all of the personal belongings, the little personal belongings they had, took everything. Books, photos, letters, whatever they had, everything was taken, everything was destroyed, everything is gone. They don't have anything. They don't even have enough soap. They don't have shaving products, hygiene products. They don't have anything. The only possession a Palestinian political prisoner has is one copy of the Quran. And that's it. They don't have anything else. They have two pairs of underwear, one pair of pants, one jacket, two shirts, two pairs of socks, and that's it. They don't have anything else. They go out to the yard not every day. They're supposed to go out to the yard every day. They do not go every day to the yard. That's against many international conventions. They don't get outings to the yard. They don't get enough food. Since the 7th of October, the food rations have become very slim, very poor. The food that they do get is in poor quality. The rations are small and not sufficient. And the prisoners are very thin. All Palestinian. I'm not just talking about Marwan. I'm talking about all Palestinian political prisoners. They are all very thin today. Nobody is fat in the prison. Everybody is thin, very thin. Sometimes it reminds you of the films from the Holocaust era when you see these skeleton-like figures. These are the pictures that I see as a lawyer that comes into the prison, and I see them. I see these skeletons talking to me.
How often do you get to go in to visit Marwan?
About once a month.
And when was the last time you saw him?
On the 12th of April. My next visit is on the 19th of May.
What's his medical condition like?
As I reported, he was beaten 3 times since my last visit. I last visited him in February. And now in April, I didn't visit him in March because of the war with Iran. My visitation was canceled. I was supposed to visit him on the 16th of March, but the visitation was canceled supposedly because of the war with Iran. I filed a petition about that. I said that I told the court that it's not reasonable for me to not see my client because of the war with Iran, which we didn't know back then when will it be over. Just before the state had to submit the reply, Marwan was transferred from Megiddo prison in the north, where I filed the petition, in the north of Israel. They transferred him to the south of Israel, to the desert, to Ganot prison, was there's a different court, different prison, and my petition was basically nullified. It was redundant because the prisoner was no longer at Megiddo prison. So my petition was scrapped. And I know from what Marwan told me that he was beaten. He was beaten the day before he was transferred. He was beaten during the transfer. And again, he was beaten on the 8th of April, even using a dog. You know, he was beaten severely. He was bleeding from his head. He was screaming for help, asked for a medic. The medic never came. No medical treatment was given. For 2 hours, he was just bleeding, and you know, he had to take care of himself. However, he is in good state. He's a very strong man. He's a very strong and sound person. You know, and they can't really succumb him with the beating and the torture.
And he was attacked by a dog. Did the dog bite him?
No, not bite him, but you know, the dog climbs on him and beats him with his claws or something like that. He didn't bite him. No, that's not what he told me. He told me that he was that he got blows from the dog.
And I mean, his overall medical condition, like how's his heart? How's his skin?
I can't answer every question about that. I can't answer exactly about his medical condition, but I can say that he's not getting proper medical care.
Does he require medications?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I know, not.
His imprisonment in Megiddo and now in the Negev is is a flagrant violation of Article 76 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. Protected people, I mean, you're smiling. Of course, this is the same as like 10,000 Palestinian prisoners, and most of them are held inside what we call Israel proper, kind of a little quaintly. And this is in violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention. There's some prisoners, protected people are supposed to be jailed inside occupied territory.
Okay.
Any comment on that?
No.
I mean, Israel is totally free to violate the Fourth Geneva Convention.
Israel is not adhering to international law. We all know this. What's the point of going around? I don't understand the question. Of course, Israel is not committed to international law. Israel is violating international law. Israel is even violating Israeli law. So, no, of course, Israel is not complying to international law. That's ridiculous.
Now, prisoners are supposed to have access.
Prisoners are not supposed to be tortured. Prisoners are not supposed to be beaten. Prisoners are not supposed to be denied food, be denied outings to the yard, be denied soap, be denied utensils, be denied plates, be denied mattresses. They're not supposed to. But they are, and they do, and that's it. That's the situation.
The International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, is supposed...
Are not getting into the prisons, at least since the 7th of October, no visitation from the Red Cross at all.
Huh, which is, of course, a flagrant violation of law, but we've touched on that. Ken, I mean, I think you've answered this question, but I'll ask it again. Is Marwan able to, does he have any books? Is he able to read or write?
No. I said, there's nothing. Prisoners have nothing. No personal belongings except from one copy of the Quran, and that's it. They don't have anything else. They don't have radio. They don't have internet. They don't have nothing. They have no connection to the outside world. They don't have visitations. They didn't see their families in years. They don't know anything. They don't know who is the prime minister. They don't know if the war is over. They don't know if there is a war. They have no idea what is going on outside, except for what little information the specific lawyer of a specific prisoner is giving them.
Is Marwan in solitary confinement?
is in separation. It's not solitary. He's with another prisoner. Is in separation from the other prisoners. He is not in the general population of the prison. He is in separation with another prisoner.
And what are your own challenges? I mean, obviously, you've said you're only able to visit Marwan like once a month, and that can be that visitation can be suspended just arbitrarily. But you know, aside from that, what kinds of obstructions or impediments do you, as Marwan Barghouti's lawyer, face? Are you harassed?
Yes, yes, many, many, many problems, indeed. First of all, you know, they have so many tricks and methods in order to limit and inhibit the lawyer's visitations. They do it not just for Marwan, they do it with all prisoners. For example, with another prisoner of mine, they had me like wait for 3 months or 5 months for a visit. I had to file petitions. My petitions are usually successful, because the visitation is supposed to happen ASAP. You know, they do all sorts of methods. With another client of mine, you know, after a district court told the IPS, the Israeli Prison Service, that they must allow a visit as soon as possible, they started torturing him every time I came to visit. So he asked me himself not to come anymore, you know. So there are many, many forms of ways to limit and inhibit the lawyers. For example, last time I visited two prisoners, Marwan and my other client, and I had to wait for 5 hours between the first prisoner and then Marwan. I had to wait for 5 hours with no food, no water, no toilets, in a closed room. I had to wait there for 5 hours before I got to see Marwan, because they waited for all of the other prisoners that had visitations that same day to finish up, and only then they brought in Marwan and I could see him. Other than that, the phones weren't working, so I had to scream through the glass. It was a really crazy situation. We had to scream, you know. My other client, not my one, he has problems hearing, you know. He couldn't hear me. This was the situation. They said, well, there's nothing we can do. The phones are not working. And I know that from the other prisoners as well, that none of the phones were working that day. So all of the lawyers, all of the prisoners had to scream through the protective glass.
How's his morale?
As I reported, a mental condition is sound. He's very aware. He knows exactly what's going on. He's a very strong person mentally. You know, he's a sharp, strong, mentally strong individual.
Do you think that Marwan Barghouti faces imminent or potential kind of threat, given the fact that Itamar Ben-Gvir's, you know, notorious visit to the prison, speaking to Barghouti himself and threatening him?
Of course. I mean, just to, you know, he was beaten 10 times since the 7th of October. 2023, he was beaten 10 times. It was 7 times since the 7th of October 23 until 15th of September 25, was beaten 7 times. And now, in just 2 weeks, he was beaten 3 times. So I do think there is some sort of escalation, or something is really going on. And I know that the food rations even got smaller in the past month. So yes, there is definitely escalation of the torture and violence, yes.
What are the prospects for him being released? I mean, F.W. Leclerc in South Africa released Nelson Mandela, and Joe Biden pardoned Leonard Peltier Peltier in the United States. These very well-known political prisoners. But I myself have a hard time imagining Israel, you know, apartheid Israel, releasing Marwan Barghouti. It would take enormous amount of pressure to get Israel to release him. And I know that there's a campaign underway, there has been for years.
Well, I'm not a marketing guy. I don't know about marketing. I don't know about advocacy, international advocacy. I know about law. And according to the Israeli law, there is no prospect of him getting released. Of course, international pressure. The only prospect he has for release is by hostage deal or, a pardon. We know that in the last hostage deal, he was vetoed out of the deal. So I don't think Israel will let him go, no.
Ben Marmarelli, thank you so much for joining me on the Green Planet Monitor. I'm super grateful, and convey our best wishes and salute to Marwan Barghouti to the extent that you're able to.
Thank you very much.
Ben Marmarelli is an Israeli lawyer. Marwan Barghouti is Ben's client. Read more about Marwan Barghouti and apartheid Israel's carceral continuum at greenplanetmonitor.net. That's it for today's GPM, a joint production of Earth Chronicle Productions and 93.3 CFMU-FM, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Thanks to our news editor, Kylie Wong. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Blueberry, and on Canada's Harbinger Media Network. I'm David Kattenberg. Over and out. For now.
In higher animals, the brain is like a Lamborghini. Amazing engineering, but expensive to run. In a human, the brain uses about 10 times more energy than any other organ. A bird's system is exquisitely attuned to this expense. And among several carefully studied species like the black-capped chickadee, a very smart adaptation has evolved. You can usually hear the black-capped chickadees call throughout fall and winter, but they aren't singing much. They don't need to. So in their brains, the centers that control how they learn and give voice to songs shrink. But as spring nears and the birds resume singing in earnest, these control centers in the brain rejuvenate. This same seasonal fluctuation appears true of the chickadee's hearing ability. Experiments have shown that a bird's hearing is more acute in spring. So is their ability to interpret sounds. This may help male birds tell the difference between a neighboring male he already knows and an interloper who's infringing on his territory. And more finely attuned hearing can also help a female bird rate the songs of males she hears so she can pick out the best partner. All of which means that seasonal changes in the gray matter itself put birds' brains in a class by themselves. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
You are now listening to Home of Burnaby Rock on CJSF 90.1 FM.